from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Joe Block had those calls right here on 93.7 The Fan. Pirates on the map? Sure. Are they close to the epicenter? Maybe not quite, but 50-49. After losing the finale to the Phillies 6-0 yesterday, but those first two wins sort of made that a house money finale in some ways for the Pirates. They get two unexpected ones against the Phillies without throwing their best, which starts tonight when Mitch Keller goes, and then a guy you might have heard of by the name of Paul Skeens throws tomorrow for the Pirates. And what is, I think, pretty obviously for a team that's now played 99 games, the biggest series of their season. It is one that is going to go a long way towards determining exactly how I think Ben Cherington looks at his team. I think it's going to be one of those measuring stick series. The Cardinals, after a pretty horrible start to this season, are doing what the Cardinals always do, which is winning a lot more games than they lose. Pirates sweep the Cardinals. Pirates find themselves ahead of the Cardinals in the standings by a half a game. It would be 53-49 versus 52-50, actually a game ahead, excuse me. They're two back of the Cardinals right now, seven back of the Brewers. They have managed to get to 50 wins. They are 3.5 clear of the NL Central seller. And when you look at the wild card standings, well, they're right in the middle of everything. They are in the thick of it, let's just say. This team has a real honest-to-God shot to actually make some noise down the stretch here, because of the fact that they went into the All-Star break on a 6-1 heater and came out of the All-Star break winning their first two when people thought they might get snowed in. Frankly, I was among them and thought that this would be a team that struggled to even get one win against the Philadelphia Phillies. If you haven't figured it out by now, it's the PM team. We are live from Bowser Chevrolet in Monroeville. Andrew Filippone off today and back tomorrow. Donnie Football is here. Dallas Braden, a man who threw the 19th perfect game in baseball history, is going to join the show in about a half hour, as a lot of what we're going to do today is not only reacting to a series that I think fired people up like few have in this town in a while in baseball, but also look at what's next, because there was a two-step process here that had to get, I think, handled or done. Was kind of one needed to happen before the other could. You needed to wait to see what that series was going to turn out like for the Pirates before I think you proceeded with your next steps of wondering what they should do, or really formulating that full-on opinion of what they should do. And at least what I saw from the Pirates tells me, half game out of a wild card spot right now, got up off the deck, I think, in very impressive fashion in the first game of that Philly series, and then got another brilliant pitching performance from Luis Ortiz in the second game to assure themselves a series victory. It tells me that they're this. They're good enough. I don't know how good the Pirates are. I think the Pirates have obvious warts. They still don't have, by any stretch of the imagination, a good offense. But the Pirates are one thing. The Pirates are good enough to be in the hunt. And the way baseball is structured these days, that's all that really matters. You can have an offense that ranks near the bottom of the NL in almost every single category, like runs, like hits, like doubles, like strikeouts. You actually want to be first in that category. They strike out way too much. They're terrible at getting on base. They're terrible at slugging the baseball. They're second to last in the NL in OPS. You can have major warts, but if you have really good pitching like the Pirates do, those warts can go away. And make no mistake, the Pirates have very good pitching. Ortiz being one of the latest examples of a guy who's actually thrown more innings this year than Paul Skeens and is boasting peripheral numbers that aren't Skeensian but aren't that far off. It is not a perfect team, but it is a team that, at least for me, proved with two pretty damn big wins that it's good enough. Good enough to augment. Good enough to take seriously down the stretch. One that should be good enough given the way the pitching lineup, the pitching matchups line up, to win this series against the St. Louis Cardinals. I feel, having watched those two games against the Phillies, the two wins, I feel like you'd have to be pretty energized about this team right now, even if you have major skepticism about their ability to go deep into a postseason or to really hang in there all the way down the stretch. I feel like you have to have seen enough to at least think they can linger, though. Maybe not take command, but linger. And I feel like there's some energy around them. I was at that game Friday night as a fan. Shout-outs to my, of course, Ticket Nick. When I say I was at that game, shout-outs to Ticket Nick. I had a huge group of people. Half of them were Phillies fans coming from the other side of the state. In-laws have some Philadelphia-adjacent relatives. They were expecting a Phillies coronation. The only ominous, funny thing was one of them said, get to Aaron Nola in the first inning or you're dead. Well, the Pirates did after going down 3-0. They tie the game. It goes back and forth and they win. And I will say this. It was an electric atmosphere. It was the kind of one that makes you feel like or wish, man, I wish it could be this way all the time in Pittsburgh with baseball. But I'll say this about that game, independent of the atmosphere, which was great, even with two screaming children at times gumming up the works, or really one screaming child. It was one of those games, and I don't know if you felt this way watching it. It definitely felt this way in the ballpark. And what I'm going to say sounds kind of bad about this game, but it won't be in the end. That was the kind of game where right up until the second Nick Gonzalez got the game-winning hit, I was positive the Pirates were going to lose. I felt like they were going to lose going into the game. I felt like they were going to lose after a half inning of baseball. I felt like they were still going to lose even after they tied the game at 3. I felt like they were going to lose when they went back down again. When it got to the point where it was 7-4, I thought, okay, this game is like fully over. They got beat. They're going to have to really do work in the middle game and then pray that they get something good in the last game of this series. They need to try to keep their heads above water. And lo and behold, took until the very last pitch of the baseball game, they won it. I'm not saying that that makes them a great team, but I am saying that that makes them a team that is clearly believing. You're going against the best team in baseball, by all accounts, by just about any metric. They're the World Series betting favorite right now, the Philadelphia Phillies. You're not playing well. You don't get a good start from your pitcher, who's been up and down, to be generous, of Martin Perez. You have almost everything you could possibly have going against you in that game, and it still happens that you find a way to win. That tells me you've got a team that believes. Certainly a team that believes like that is a team worth augmenting, even if it's only in a mild way, even if it's a way that's more about adding a useful player, yes, but a show of faith that, hey, I think this team is worth making better. This team's worth fighting for. This team's worth adding to. This team is worth sacrificing a little bit of the future of to try to get better right now. That's how I came out of that game feeling. Energized. Ready for this series. Maybe the other thing about that series with the Phillies is knowing how, and they dodged a bullet. We all criticize them for the way they handled the pitching rotation coming out of the All-Star break. They dodged a bullet. Sometimes good teams end up having that happen to them. They do something that you probably don't think is the greatest idea in the world, and then it ends up working, and you just shrug your shoulders and say, well, got this one. It feels like the Pirates have the clear advantage right now. It feels like in this coming series, the Pirates have the advantage. When you start, I know Lance Lynn's going in the second game. I know Lance Lynn, actually, it's probably one of those names you'd love to see if you're a Pirates fan. He hasn't been that good this year. In fact, he's been pretty bad, and the Pirates have historically beaten up on him at times. You start Keller Skeens against almost any other two pitchers in baseball, you feel like you should win both those games. It really feels like the Pirates have a chance to do that. You beat up on the Cardinals twice. You have a rubber match on an afternoon on Wednesday that even if you lose it, leaves you knowing that you took two series that you needed to take coming out of the break. 4-2 against two teams that if the season ended today would be in the playoffs. That ain't half bad. Donnie Football is here. You can get at us at 412-928-9370. That is the Fan Text Line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm. We always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. I watched a team, Donnie, win 2 out of 3 from the Phillies, and I wouldn't say make me a believer, but they have my attention completely. Not that they didn't before, but they really kind of got my attention with that first game and then following it up by kind of just suffocating them in the second game. It was impressive to watch. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, the first game for sure, how I thought that was going to go, when you watch the or think back to the top of the first inning, Philly puts 3 up pretty quickly. Perez looks like it'll be a short night for him. And to be honest with you, I was thinking of Pirates teams in the past that probably would have just laid down and would have taken a beating in a game like that. My initial thought was, all right, they're gonna get something handed to them tonight. They'll probably lose like 7-1 or maybe even worse based on how I saw that top of the first go. They immediately retaliated, not by just scoring 1 run or 2, but they even up the game at 3, and I just had a whole different mindset about it. I think just because of that. I was worried that the offense would be flat and that the All-Star break was coming at the worst possible time since they had won 4 games in a row. I know 3 of them were against the worst team in baseball, but still, you're going into the All-Star break at the time at your hottest since the first week of the season. I thought top of the first inning, Philly was going to railroad them. But the way that they countered that told me, okay, maybe this series, maybe this little weekend will be something special. I mean, Friday night, you got to see one of the better regular season games in that ballpark, Chris, and I don't think that's an exaggeration in the near 25 years of its existence. And then Saturday, they just, from bell to bell, even though
happened. How good are you feeling about this team right now, or what are you feeling about this team right now after you see them take 2 of 3, after you see the rotation is set with Keller and Skeens for this 3-game set against the Cardinals? You starting a little bit to believe in the Pirates based on what you saw coming out of the All-Star break. This team now in their last, do the math here, Donnie, last 10 games, I believe, 8-2, 6-1 heading into the break, and then 2-1 coming out of the break.
Strom comes home. Swing, fly ball, deep center field. Rojas back to the wall. There it goes into the Pirates bullpen. O'Neill Cruz unloads. What a soaring line drive smash by O'Neill Cruz. A 2-run home run. And you can put this one on ice. It's 4-0 Buccos.
That was an impressive piece of business by O'Neill Cruz against an all-star lefty reliever, and he just hit a rocket way out of PNC Park. It got overshadowed a little bit in terms of impressive home runs by what Bryce Harper did in the 9th inning, but Bryce Harper's home run was meaningless other than going, ooh, ah, hit the ball far. I was at the game Friday, like I said, and O'Neill Cruz in that game hit what I've got to believe is one of the hardest hit balls in Major League Baseball. What was it, Donnie, on Friday? 122.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Two off the bat? Was it harder than that?
Yeah, that double in the first inning.
Here's my vantage point. So I was sitting on... right by the left field foul pole, right? Like, easily I could have, like, thrown a baseball and hit it. I was that close. Like, even I couldn't have missed Donnie. Now, if you'd put a putter in my hands, it might have been a different story, but that's another story for another day. I'm sitting there, so I have a great view of, like, center field and right field, especially, to just really get the angle. I think Philly's center fielder had maybe started to turn and taken 3 to 4 steps total. And I was trying to, like, count them in my mind's eye. The ball hit the wall before I think he had completed his 4th step backwards. Like, he stopped for a brief split second. He started to turn. He got 1, 2, 3. And before the 4th foot was down, that ball was off the wall. And the reason I think that's so huge is it's obvious this guy is coming alive now. It's obvious that O'Neal Cruz is starting to turn into the baseball player lately that they thought he was going to be, the offensive force. Ben Cherington addressed it at length on his radio show yesterday, kind of their approach, their internal belief about him. And now he's starting to meet some of the benchmarks that they had for him when they had them for him this year. The guy's got something like a 950 OPS in July. You get more of that from him, you become a very difficult team to deal with if you can put Reynolds, Cruz in the middle of your lineup, and then you just kind of hope Tellez and guys like that can pick up the slack or keep picking up the slack like Tellez has done. You've got two guys you can build a lineup around. Gonzalez isn't afraid out there. You've got a little bit of offense. You just need to augment it now. 412-928-9370. I wanted a Pirates vibe check, frankly, after seeing this team take 2 of 3 in a series where, quite honestly, I thought they weren't going to win a single game. Based on the pitching matchups, I thought Ortiz might be able to win them one, but he was going against Philly's best pitcher in the series. So I did not have high hopes, and the Pirates definitely exceeded them. How are you feeling about them? 412-928-9370. Here's Kevin on the Fan. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
What's up, man?
I was at the game, too, and I want to talk about the 3 levels of belief. 1, I do believe the team believes. 2, I think the fans believe, including myself. It's been a while since I've been to a game like that on Friday. But the big question for everybody is, does the ownership believe enough to do something to put this team over the top? That's the big question we have to ask ourselves.
Well, if you go by, just to be fair, if you go by what Bob Nutting, and thanks, Kevin, if you go by what Bob Nutting said weeks ago, they needed an addition right then and there. And there has been a lot of consternation since about who was telling the truth or what was going on exactly with Ben Cherington. You know, did Ben Cherington not want to trade people and Bob Nutting did? Was Bob Nutting willing to add a big salary, like an already big arbitration salary onto this roster? They have, what do the Pirates have now? 8 days. They have 8 days between now and the trade deadline to decide what they are. And I think there will be, given what has already been said by Bob Nutting and at times by Ben Cherington, there is going to be a potential for a reckoning if July 30th deadline comes and goes and the Pirates make either no or very minimal moves, like barely impactful moves, you will have a litany of things that have been said in the past to come back to and say, really? Were you sure that you were that serious about this? Rich is on 93.7 The Fan. Hey, Rich.
Hey, yeah, thanks for taking the call. I bring my grandsons up to Pittsburgh for an eight-hour drive. We were there Friday night, and two impactful moments were, holy crow, did we just do that? One was the double steal. I couldn't believe my Pirates were actually playing ball like that on offense. And then the other one on defense was when Marsh struck out. I mean, that was just, you know, I thought it was 1960 again, which I was around for.
Rich, I would say that Derek Shelton has not been a favorite of most people on our shows as far as fans calling in, a lot of hosts opining that he just doesn't look like he's bringing a lot to the table. I thought if O'Neill Cruz maybe had his stock continue to go up in this series, Derek Shelton did himself some favors. The double steal call wins that game for them. That's the bottom line. He won the game with a double steal, and that is a gutsy thing to try to do. Let's put it that way. That is a gutsy, gutsy maneuver. And because he did it, they won the game. I think now with Derek Shelton, you see, does he have that sort of feel in time and space and like the moments of the game? Does he have a sense of the game if he gets another chance like that against the Cardinals? Is that a one-off? Is that Derek Shelton just is plucking one great move from an otherwise kind of underwhelming resume? I think that was one of his best moments as Pirates manager. I was trying to think of like tactically if there was anything that he had ever done that was clearly a managerial decision that worked out that well. I could not really come up with anything. And I'm not talking even so much about like bullpen management. I'm just talking about like clever managing of the game. I know baseball, since the DH has become universal, maybe some of the hit and run charm and some of that stuff has gone out of the game. But Derek Shelton never seemed to really excel at that. But that double steal was phenomenal. It was the decision and moment of the game right up until Nick Gonzalez actually made the moment of the game. Grant is on 93.7 The Fan. Hey, Grant.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
I just want to say I'm a big fan of the show, but I have a question for you guys.
Yes.
Are we allowed to start calling them the Battling Buccos again after that game one against the Phillies?
No one was preventing you from doing it in the first place, Grant. You could have called them the Battling Buccos in the privacy of your heart. You could have screamed it from the mountaintops, pal.
Yeah, I mean, are we allowed to start? Is that a term that's appropriate now? Are the Buccos at that level where...
For the battling meter or the Buccos meter, would you say like in red, it's like the John Russell era, yellow is thinking about it here, 2011, and then when it gets into the green zone, it is battling? Is that what you're trying to get at here?
Something like that. You know, obviously, you can call them Battling Buccos in the privacy of your home, but if you actually meet it and you actually think that they're actually the Battling Buccos, is that appropriate? That's just my question to you.
Grant, I think it's appropriate. Grant, stay on hold, because guess what, pal? You call into my show, you have a question about semantics where Battling Buccos is concerned, the appropriateness or lack thereof of the Battling Buccos as a term. You know what you deserve? A four-pack of tickets and a food voucher to the Pony League World Series at Lou Hayes Pony Field. That's August 9th through August 14th. Our guy Grant just took that home with a Battling Buccos-related question. They battled. That was the win of the season for them, easily, I thought. And we always like to do this in the course of a six-month endless baseball season. I'm of the opinion that if they end up making the playoffs, even as a wild card, even if they go out and, you know, and lose the playoff series that they would get to, I do think if this season ends with them in the postseason, people are going to point back to that game as one of the major signposts along the way. And I think when you're a really, really good baseball team, you don't necessarily have as many of those. What's Philly, 63-36, something like that? I'm sure Phillies fans can point to a handful of games that were sweeter than others for them to win, some comebacks that they've had. When you're a team like the Pirates, I think those games are magnified to the nth degree. That felt like being in the park for it. That felt like a huge win. My older kid, does not really even care that much about sports as of now. He was fired up when they won with everybody screaming. He was pumped. He was shaking his fists. That felt like a big deal for them. not just for the fans, but for the players too, because you knew who you were going against. You knew the hole you dug for yourself. You knew the second hole you dug for yourself, and it still worked out. Live from Studio B, Bowser Chevrolet in Monroeville, PM team. Chris Muller solo today. Andrew Filippone has, I think, some family still in town after Stella's party. I missed the Stella Filippone first birthday bash. Very bummed out that I did. Wife and kids went. I was busy butchering the Moon Open yet again. Thinking to myself, you shouldn't be in the C flight. Chris, you're better than this. You can win this thing. Came out of it with a lovely case of the putting yips and an inability to hit any uphill putt whatsoever. Just completely spazzed. To the point, Donnie, where I am now adopting the Jordan Spieth putting technique. And for those of you who don't watch a lot of golf, inside of 5 feet, he doesn't look at the ball when he puts it. He looks at the hole, looks down at the ball, looks back up at the hole, and then makes his putting stroke. He looks directly at what he's trying to hit, not what he's actually putting. So I missed that party and probably psychologically would be in much better shape if I had decided not to golf this weekend and torture myself and instead gone to a fun little child's birthday party. Also, I heard the boys, how would you describe their behavior, Donnie? Good?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, pretty Ace typical Lennox, for their decent. Age.
The hot dog shirts I heard were a big hit.
They were, yeah. And Lennox, he quickly made his way over to the little playground that was set up. It was a quite an extensive first birthday party, that's for sure.
Well, that's the big one.
There was not a shortage of things to do.
No, you're supposed to do the first birthday party up big. We did Aces with like a Kona ice truck last year and barbecue catered and all this stuff. Like, that's the big one. And then second birthday party, you try to make it still fun, but it's not nearly the same deal as the first one. Yeah, Lennox got his face painted like a skull. Now, did Sarah get her fill of being around little Ace? Because I always get the, from your lovely girlfriend, I always get the, more Ace pictures. Come on, what's Ace been up to?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they sat down and ate right next to us. We got there a little bit earlier than what Alex and the boys did. But they sat down with us, so yeah, I'd say she got her fill. Ace is a real character, that's for sure.
Oh my God, is he ever. The child is just, he's a menace, in a good way. But he's starting to talk just like I predicted everybody he would right around the time I predicted that he would. And now I'm not a moment's peace.
He definitely likes the word no, which I know you've told us.
Likes the word no. This morning he just randomly started saying coffee over and over again. And because he can't say L's yet, he calls Lennox somehow as mice. So if he goes, where's Mike? If he goes mice, we have to like not freak out in the house because he's actually talking about his brother. We did get one tweet that said Shelton, Donnie, I wondered if you had the same opinion as me on this. Shelton, you know, gave Mike Ribello all the credit for calling that double steal. You know, gave it to the third base coach, passed it along. I put anything like that that happens, even if the manager himself says somebody else called for it, I put all of that stuff under the manager's purview. Like, if you're a head coach in football and your coordinator calls a great play, I give some of the credit back to the head coach there because everybody that's working for him reflects back on him, good or bad, don't you? Like when we have crushed Andy Haynes, when we have killed Andy Haynes for like not, you know, when this team, I know they're bad at hitting still, but when they were in the absolute dumps, didn't you also feel like that was a reflection on Derek Shelton because that's his hitting coach?
Yeah, I mean, and the way that he went about it was just, I think, what a lot of coaches will do. When things go well, he's going to credit somebody else in that case if they made the call to make it happen. And if it doesn't go well, he's going to take the blame and accept the blame. If it, you know, if the double steal had been a disaster,
he probably wears it.
Yeah, I think he's taken that more himself.
I was surprised that, because I was in the ballpark, obviously watching it, and they rarely show replays in there, and maybe I just hadn't noticed that before because I hadn't been to games where there had been a ton of challengeable calls. They rarely showed them. I don't know about you. I still couldn't believe they called Cruz out on at second base trying to stretch that into a double, and then didn't even feel it was necessary to review Taylor going into third. I must not have seen a good angle. I thought that was as close a play at third base on the double steal as you could possibly get. And Philly looked at it and basically didn't even think it was worth going to them for it.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder. I mean, I
they
guess.
They have to have other angles. They have to have other angles in those dugouts.
I was going to say, it has to come down to the access that they have that we don't. Because sometimes you do really wonder why or why not a play gets challenged. I mean, in this case, why not? And you have to think that they got to be seeing something that we're clearly not seeing.
Donnie, I'm going to put you on the spot right now. Are you ready for something? Now, we are getting, at least in real time, the possibility of a Belfont snorkel from Dallas Braden. Dallas Braden is the A's color analyst. We wanted to talk to him. We had ideas, designs on talking to him about two different players on the A's, Brent Rooker and also Mason Miller. Miller, maybe just because, like, wow, can you believe this guy? He's unbelievable. But we wanted to have our deadline debates. Newest segment that still is remaining unsponsored with 8 days till the trade deadline. We're getting a little bit of the Belfont snorkel. Now, Dallas Braden is known more than anything else for having thrown the 19th perfect game in the history of Major League Baseball, Donnie. Now, there have been 24 official perfect games thrown. If you're like me, there have really been 25 and only one of them a 28-out perfect game, and that would be Armando Galarraga. To me, he threw a perfect game, and then he had to get one extra out, so it's actually even more impressive, okay? Now, I'm going to give you two of these. One is a guy named Lee Richmond, and that was in 1880. Cook was there to cover it. The other was John Montgomery Ward, also in 1880. Cook also covering that game 5 days later. Those are the two non-World Series-era perfect games, but they still count towards the total. Can you name for me, besides Dallas Braden, any of the other 21 pitchers with a perfect game? Or 21 pitchers, because I don't think anyone's thrown two off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean, so Braden's, just to touch on his first, I mean, that was the Mother's Day one, and he was somebody who had lost his mother, so that made it all the more special.
Yep.
The one I'll never forget, though, at least for, I think, people of my generation, like kids that grew up, at this point, it would have been, what, like 13 years ago or something? I can't even remember the exact year.
I feel like I know maybe which one you're going to say here, but I'm not positive.
I'm never going to forget the Mark Burley one.
Mark Burley! Well, because I think Burley's contains the best play to sustain a perfect game defensively that I've ever seen. Dwayne Wise going back and then juggling the ball back into the field of play.
I have a friend who, a baseball diehard, it's not Smeltzer. I have another very good friend who is someone that hates that Dwayne Wise play.
Why?
He thinks that Wise, in a way, was trying to, like, show it up, and he nearly lost the perfect game by, like, the ball juggle that he had. He hates the play.
Wait, hold on. I want to make sure I heard this correctly. You have a friend that thinks Dwayne Wise, like, hot dog Jim Edmonds that ball.
Yes.
Come on, man. Your friend, no.
Yep.
Has your friend ever played baseball?
Yes.
And been in a dead run back to the wall to try to figure out how to time a leap?
So now that I don't know. I don't think he was like an outfielder.
I've watched that play probably a dozen times. It is very obvious that he is trying to find the wall, going back in pretty much a dead run. Because that ball, my recollection is that ball was more hit closer to a line drive than it was like a true high fly ball. I remember, in my mind's eye, that ball being hit pretty well. He's running pretty hard to the wall, and he has to go up there and basically take it right at the last possible second. I saw no hot dogging there at all.
I mean, I've always thought the play was awesome. I thought the whole thing was awesome, because the reason I think another reason why I remember it so much was because MLB Network was relatively new. I think a few years old, maybe, at the time that game was played. And here I am. I can't even tell you the exact year that it was played. I just remember
2009.
Okay.
That game.
I just know it was around the time I was in middle school. It was a middle of the week game, and it was an afternoon game. So MLB Network did one of the things it normally does, like today, where, you know, the Yankees and Rays are playing right
Donnie,
now.
Donnie, it's 15 years to the day tomorrow that game happened.
Really?
Believe it or not. Yes. I just happened to scroll down as I have, like, my list in front of me here. 15 years ago tomorrow.
Yeah, so I mean, here I am, kid that's, you know, summer off, because, you know, we're in late July at this point. There's a game on MLB Network. I'm just watching it as like a 14-year-old kid, and it's a perfect game.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I also love Hawk Harrelson on that call, the last out. Alexei! And he's going nuts.
Alexei Ramirez.
Yep. I do like Hawk on that call. Hawk is not for everybody, and Hawk half the time pisses me off, but he did great with that.
The Roy Halladay one. Okay, so you've sticks out too.
So you've named
Miami.
Two of them. Okay, so that was the next one. How many more? I'm going to give you three strikes and you're out. True baseball form. I'll give you basically a couple seconds. Just start trying to think of guys who have thrown one. You get three of them wrong, we'll stop.
Okay.
So you've got those two already, and you've obviously got Braden, and I gave you the two from the Ron Cook era.
Yeah, so the Giants have had multiple as well, in the last, 10 to 20 years. Kane threw one, correct? Kane?
That's correct. Matt Kane did throw one, 10-0 over the Astros.
I want to say Tim Lincecum has one.
Tim Lincecum does not have one.
Okay, so maybe he may just be two perfect.
He has a couple
or two no hitters.
I mean, he's got a couple of no nos. Yeah,
yeah.
The Giants do not have multiples from what I can see. I kind of went along with that, but they do not. So
okay,
strike one.
Yeah, because I know another no hitter, but not perfect game they had was former Pirate Jonathan Sanchez.
Correct.
Here's one for you. That's an absolute no name. Phil Humber with the White Sox.
That's a very good. Yep. 96 pitches too. He got it done.
And I don't know if you ever watched that game, Malzy. A very,
very questionable ball four that was not called as ball four for the last out, right?
Yes.
They called it
a swinging strike.
Yeah, it pissed off the hitter. And I remember thinking to myself, that was definitely an umpire going the other way on Jim Joyce.
Yeah.
All right, keep going.
Oh man,
I know it's getting late early out there.
Was David Wells a perfect game
perfect
or just
game.
No-hitter? Okay.
You nailed it. Hung over, too, which makes it the most impressive one on this list.
Oh, man, I can't remember the other.
There's another Yankees threw back-to-back ones. They were throughout baseball. Like, the Yankees were a team that had Wells's, and then another Yankee threw one a year later.
I know Domingo Germán threw one last year.
He's the most recent thrower of a perfect game, Domingo Germán.
Man, I'm gonna be kicking myself. I can't think of the. Does Randy Johnson have a perfect?
He has
game?
One. Yeah, he has a pretty dominant one. Struck out 13, threw a lot of pitches, 117
was that
of them.
With like the Diamondbacks against the Braves, was that
yes,
the game?
It was 2-0. Correct.
Okay. Pedro never had one.
No, but there's a last name Martinez that does.
Oh man.
Oh boy. I know this guy because he played for Cleveland for a while when they were kind of my favorite team when the Pirates weren't very good when I was, you know, in that little time in the 90s when the Indians were all that.
Got
Expos.
I can't really think of it, so I'm going to have to go elsewhere, I think.
Dennis Martinez. Dodgers.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known that one.
Did it to the Dodgers. All right, if you can name two more, I will consider you the winner here, but then we have to go.
I just had one in my head, Malzy.
World Series, very famous one. Only World Series perfect game.
Oh, Koufax.
Wrong, but he did throw one, so I'll consider that correct.
Oh, now I'm getting in my own head, Malzy.
One clue, and then we're done. Okay. Happy Gilmore. Think the last name. Think Happy Gilmore. Not actually Gilmore, but a character.
Right.
That's my boss, Mr. Dun, dun, dun.
How am I not getting this with Happy Gilmore? Who is it?
Don Larson.
Perfect oh, Mr. game. Larson.
Mr. Larson. All right, Donnie, you did
How did
okay.
I not get that? I'm ashamed of that one, Malzy.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number
number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.